This is an OSV Podcasts production. To learn more about OSV Podcast Network, visit osvpodcasts.com.
Peace and blessings, my people. Welcome to the Revive Podcast. And I got a question. Have you heard about these Eucharistic miracles? We got to talk about this right here. Brothers and sisters throughout the world, welcome again to the Revive Podcast. I am your host, Father Agustino Torres.
And I'm your co-host, Solange.
Solange, how are you doing today?
I am doing great. I am really excited. Today's episode is going to be beautiful.
I agree. But, you know, at the same time, like all of our episodes are exciting. I mean,
they
I'm just saying.
That's not to say that the rest are not. But what we're going to get into today is something that so many people look forward to. There's so much curiosity. There is, it's a miracle. And what we're going to get into is something that we need to talk about. It's going to get intense. It's going to get wonderful. It's going to have a little bit of everything, but it's so needed in the church. It's needed in because of our faith. It's needed in every way possible. So I can't wait.
We're going to be talking about this. We have our guest here with us, Father Robert Spitzer. How are you doing, Father Robert?
I'm doing very well. Thank you so much.
Father Spitzer, I mean, can I just say it is an honor. Very grateful for all your work. For those of you who may not know Father Robert, he is a Jesuit. He taught a whole lot in Gonzaga University, who I hear that they have like a basketball team there that, you know, is kind of good. praying for my college basketball team that does not do nowhere as near as good as Gonzaga. Go Seton Hall Pirates. I was speaking, Father Robert, to the brothers, the Franciscan friars, and they were super excited that you were going to be coming on the podcast because a lot of them have been really inspired by your work, by your scientific research. It's not just, so this is the beauty, and I'm sure you're going to get into it. It's sometimes we have like this understanding of science that's like so, I guess, in a way, shallow, if I could say. And like when you bring the faith and the science, kind of like is, you know, theology is faith seeking understanding, right? And like you when we understand more through the science, it just becomes more alive. I mean, that's what I think. But Father Robert, it's great to have you here.
Oh no, it's great to be with both of you. And I do try to combine that wonderful perspective of science and forming and reinforcing faith, and faith informing and reinforcing science. Believe it or not, the two are very complementary indeed.
So, if you're listening and you got an atheist in the house, and he's like, you know, they're saying like, "I'm a man of science," you need to call them over. Share one of your earbuds or put this on speaker because Father Robert has something for you guys. Isn't that right, Solange?
Yeah, no, that's right. It's going to be a little bit of both. So exactly. If there's someone that says no, because I'm all about the science, then great. This is for you. This is for us. And we can't wait to get into that, Father Robert. So it's beautiful when we think about the Eucharistic miracles, right? But it's something that is so hard for so many of us to like really just, you know, we wonder about it, like how it goes about. We see what the science says. We see like there's like feelings involved. There's like so much. So before we get into this, how about we ask you what is, and we ask this to our guests. We love to do this. What is your revive to keep it alive?
Well, as a Jesuit, you know, my very first thing to revive to keep it alive is Holy Mass. I mean, honestly, celebrating the Eucharist for me is not only central to my spiritual life, it's central to my whole life. For me, it galvanizes me, it focuses me, it gives me a sense of energy. If I'm having some real challenges and difficulties during the day, I mean, sometimes just receiving the Holy Eucharist can bring a real peace, a real kind of, you know, sometimes I'm even saying the Eucharistic prayer, anticipating the Holy Eucharist, and the peace already becomes, you know, quite palpable. And so that's my first area that is really important. I'm a rosary guy. There's no question about that.
Beautiful.
And a contemplative rosary person. And so I do use the rosary. Sometimes it's a single decade to just get myself focused. But my way of saying the rosary is just to get connected with the Lord and get connected with the Blessed Virgin Mary. Because as I'm saying those prayers, I'm very aware of their presence being in front of me, around me. And I try to connect with them. And again, that sense of peace, despite the challenges in my life, that sense of, not just peace, but almost a serenity of putting things into the hands of God that I cannot control. And then, of course, when my old, selfish and egotistical instincts get in the way, it's great to have the prayer life for Mary and the Lord to remind me. Father Spencer, quit being such an egoist here and get out of yourself and get back, to the service of the kingdom, which will make you come alive and fill you with joy once again. So those are my two big come alive revives.
I love it because I also love the joy that you say it with, right?
Yeah,
if I wasn't convinced before, I'm like, okay, I want to do that. I want that too. I want to be in mass. I want to go ahead and do the rosary, right? So that's super motivational and so needed. And then you also mentioned something there, like it really brings you to a point of basically surrendering, right? Surrendering to the Lord. And saying, you know what, whatever that is, maybe I'm being, it's my ego. Maybe I'm being selfish. Maybe I am just being so doubtful, whatever that may be. Let me just put it all, bring it all to your feet. Let me just put that all there. Let me be as real as can be, because we can do that. We can be so real with Christ, right? And speaking about real, right? The realness of the Eucharistic miracle. But I want to ask, for those that don't know, what is a Eucharistic miracle?
Well, a Eucharistic miracle, very typically the kind that I would be talking about, is when the substance of heart tissue begins to emerge from the substance of the host, right? Which is the host has a molecular framework of bread, but, or compressed bread or compressed molecules of bread or wheat. And growing out of that substance of the host is the substance of heart tissue. And intrinsic to that heart tissue is blood. And what's interesting is that even though this substance of heart tissue growing out of the host, even though it's disconnected from an embodied circulatory system, it's alive. The tissue is alive. And the reason we know that the tissue is alive is because there are white blood cells in it. And white blood cells or leukocytes or other macrophages are healing cells. And so they're carrying out healing activities in this tissue, in this blood. By the way, the blood is in all the Eucharistic miracles that have been examined from a contemporary scientific point of view, all of them have AB blood type, which is the same blood type as on the Shroud of Turin. Mm-hmm. But in any case, these white blood cells, these leukocytes, are very, very important because they're not only alive themselves. And by the way, these white blood cells would normally die, within a couple of hours after a bodily death or after the tissue was disconnected from an embodied circulatory system. So these white blood cells are not only alive, these white blood cells survive several years. And so in the case of the Buenos Aires miracle, the blood cells the white blood cells were alive almost 5 years before Dr. Zugabe examined them. And then in subsequent examinations, were still alive some 10 to 11 years after the Eucharistic miracle there in Buenos Aires. The second, the Tixla miracle, of course, it occurred in Mexico in 2006, but it it doesn't have the longevity yet of the Buenos Aires miracle, but on the last examination of everything, this was about the final examination that Dr. Castañón Gómez, Ricardo Castañón Gómez did. That was about 2011 or 12, right in that area. And still, the macrophages were actually engulfing lipids. That is to say, they were actively involved in the in a healing activity inside the blood. But with the Tixla miracle, there are some really interesting peculiarities here. Like, it's producing fresh blood to this very day, and we can talk about that a little bit more when we get there.
Hey everyone, Solange here. We hope you're enjoying this episode of Revive. Here's a quick message from our friends at the National Catholic Educational Association. Does your community need help measuring the heart of your religious education? Are you wondering if your community provides a sense of belonging for members? NCEA RISE is a family of comprehensive assessments designed to measure what your community knows and feels about the faith. But it doesn't stop there. Results can be used for instructional planning, professional development, community engagement, and more. NCEA provides meaningful network and resource support for its members. Find out more about NCEA RISE at www.ncarise.org. And now back to the show.
I have goosebumps throughout this whole time, like as soon as you started. And it's just so refreshing. It's just so wonderful to be able to hear this be explained in this way, you know. And I think also, you know, I'm going to speak for myself, and I don't know if anyone else listening, but sometimes it's just, you know, again, we're in wonder and we have to be like, you know, we're acting like doubting, what was it, Thomas? Santo Tomás, you know, we have to see to believe. And it's like, if we, well, we're already seeing, but now we're like, okay, well, let me get there. Let me get the feel of this. And again, it's just mixing all of this with the science. I mean, and I loved how you were saying how alive this all is, right? And I think those are the things that really just, yeah, like when you said that, when you meant the Shroud of Turin, did you, right? When you, that's the same blood. The same blood that is on that is the same one that they're constantly finding when it comes to these, miracles.
Yeah, the same
Eucharistic
blood type.
Miracles. Yeah, same mm-hmm. blood type.
And the blood type is the rarest we have, right? I think so AB positive blood type is by far the rarest blood type. And it's the universal receiver. That's kind of an interesting thing. We can talk about the symbolism of that in another time. But yeah, it's not just AB blood type, but there are other characteristics that are easily identifiable through electron microscope screening. You can actually see striated heart tissue as well. You can also, there are very few kinds of tissue that have striations and so forth that are like cardiac tissue. And so you can identify that very well. And like I said, you know, when you have an issue, a fresh issuing of blood, in this host that has continued over the course of 6 years, you have to ask yourself the question, yike, you know, how is this even possible? It may still continue today for all I know in 2022, but I have not yet seen contemporary investigations that have looked into it. But Dr. Castañón Gómez, the Vatican ought to build a statue to the guy. He actually paid for 13 of the lab tests himself, ranging from the DNA tests all the way down to the screening of whole blood, human hemoglobin, and of course immunoglobulins, etc. So all of these things are quite remarkable and quite present in the host. The one in Sokolka, Poland, is even more interesting. This occurred in 2008 in Poland there. And during that miracle, they actually did do electron microscope screening right away, and they could detect easily that the microfilaments in the myocardial fibrils, or at the heart of the heart tissue, are so intertwined with the microfilaments of the substance of the host that, you know, there's literally just, you know, only several microns separating them. I mean, it's just like, you know, not even NASA technology could reproduce this intertwining, intertangling between the two kinds of the two substances. Indeed, it really appears that the substance is growing out of this, the substance of the heart tissue is growing out of the substance of the host. And even more interesting, too, is that what Dr. Frederick Zugabe discovered was that the white blood cells were actually embedded in the ventricle wall that indicates that this heart tissue had undergone some kind of polytrauma. Someone was pounding or torturing the person. And furthermore, there are thrombi also that are identifiable by the two scientists at the Sekulka miracle, the ones that did the actual medical examination at University of Bialystok, Dr. Elisabetta Lopkowska, and then a completely separate investigation was done by Dr. Sulkowski, and both of them identified the same integration of the substance of the host with the substance of the heart tissue. But importantly, too, they could see that the heart tissue, even though there was healing activity going on from the white blood cells, it was in the process of dying. And so you could actually see various fissures in the heart tissue, indicating that it was in the process of dying, but still alive, but in the process of dying. And they could also identify the fact that this tissue had suffered some kind of polytrauma, some kind of maybe torture, some kind of beating around the chest, something of that nature. And, you know, of course, this is so far beyond the possibility of, you know, fraud.
Yes.
Because, you know, I mean, the Catholic Church certainly is not going to beat a person to death and then, you know, attempt to remove a piece of their heart tissue while that heart is still beating. That's the only way you're going to get those white blood cells alive and well, and try and preserve the heart tissue itself. But, I mean, there's so many miraculous dimensions to this host. I mean, first of all, these hosts just don't suffer any kind of ordinary decomposition, and the tissue does not suffer any kind of autolysis. Some, you know, the decomposition, the you know, the decaying and so forth, the breakdown of tissue. So I mean, it's like it lasts a super long time. I mean, how do you put a host in water over a 3-year period, which was the case in the Buenos Iris host, by the way, that was overseen by Archbishop Bergoglio, now Pope Francis.
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah,
and yeah, he did oversee it, and then, it, you know, 3 years. I mean, I'm telling you, hosts dissolve in water in a few days. You know, totally dissolve. Yeah. You know, and easily. And I mean, the idea that this substance of the host could not only survive, but that this tissue would be growing out of it, and that the a tissue would not be experiencing ordinary autolysis, right? All the bacteria that would eventually be there in the water between, you know, interacting the tissue and the water, you're going to have all these bacteria that are just blasting away at this piece of tissue, yet it seems to be almost immune to it. And I think, you know, Dr. Ricardo Castañón-Gómez, before he had examined the 1996 Buenos Aires miracle, basically, he was an out-and-out atheist, and he was called in to do the investigation because, you know, he was obviously a very fine professional, and they called him in to do the investigation. He got there, and after doing both the 1996 host, he was called back again to do the 2006 Atixla host, and as I said, out of his own pocket, he paid for the first 13 laboratory examinations from the DNA all the way to the whole blood to all the histological and pathological investigations of this. So he paid for it out of pocket. But then after he saw, I'll give you some of the details of the flow of blood and the Tixla miracle in a moment. But after he saw all of these things, I'm telling you, he not only converted to Catholicism, mm-hmm. or reverted to Catholicism. I assume he may have been a Catholic before becoming an atheist. But he now goes around the country, both Mexico and the United States, lecturing on the reality of the real presence in the Eucharist. And has written books on the spirituality of the Holy Eucharist. He's become, as we might say, a very active, convinced and evangelistic revert. So, and of course, these kinds of things happen all the time when people see the remarkable thing. But mm-hmm. as I was saying, you know, you look at the some of the scientifically inexplicable things. I mean, believe me, if you have a substance of the host in water and it doesn't decompose, and you have substance of the tissue in water and it's not experiencing ordinary autolysis, something is bizarre right there. And of course, for having it there in the water for several years, and you know, in the case of Tixla, sterile water as well, and so forth and so on, all these things are just, that's inexplicable. I mean, to have an active blood flow coming out of the middle of this host, and you can't say somebody dropped the, mm-hmm. The blood into the middle of the host, and that's why it's fresh blood inside the middle of the host, but it's dried on the exterior of the host. The actual measurable pressure is from the inside coming mm-hmm. out. So, you know, again, you know, how are you going to explain how fresh blood is being produced, you know, from the inside coming
exactly.
out? The pressure is a continuous flow from the inside out. And then you look at, as I said, the integration between the substance of the host, substance of the heart tissue. It's simply impossible, you know, that you can get that kind of integration with any known human technology, even of the best variety. We have no capacity to do this, you know, with a few microns separation on the level of microfilaments. You know, in both the tissue and the substance of the host. So what we're probably dealing with here is so inexplicable from a scientific point of view. I mean, then you start looking at what we call the DNA conundrum. I mean, in these hosts, now in the case of the 1996 Buenos Aires host, it was not brought for DNA analysis. There were several years separating it, I think, Pope Francis, at that time, Archbishop Bergoglio, I should say, you know, was waiting. But he had the thing photographed that established the fact that autolysis was not really overwhelming in this. So he waited a little bit, a little while. But then he took, had a little thin slice put onto, you know, a microscope plate. And he then sent that over to New York University pathology lab, which, you know, and the head pathologist at that time for New York City, Dr. Frederick Zugabee, who was also teaching at Columbia University, he actually did not know. They didn't tell him where this had come from. So mm-hmm. happened, though, he was a Catholic. Himself, a practicing Catholic before he received it, but he was just a very famous pathologist, and that's why they sent it over to him. And he said, you know, these white blood cells, this is very bizarre, because not only are they active and alive, you know, meaning mm-hmm. the tissue is alive as well, but they're disconnected from an embodied circulatory system. I don't know how you're going to explain how tissue can remain alive, disconnected from. And it's not just that, but it's, of course, these other characteristics, which are very similar to the crucifixion of Jesus, the AB blood type that's on the shroud, mm-hmm. of course, the thrombi, you know, the indications of polytrauma and the active, you know, continuation of macrophages producing their healing activities. But back to the DNA conundrum. So, Dr. Kessignon Gomez, you know, the second time around in 2006, he wasn't waiting around for several years to send it off to the DNA lab. I mean, he was right there, Johnny on the spot, sending it to, I believe, both a USA DNA lab, a Mexican, or no, it might have been a South American DNA lab. He gets these samples there right away for, polymeric chain amplification. So he looks at, or the lab people are looking at the sample, and no amplifiable profile is coming up. Now, of course, he got these samples down to the lab ASAP, you know, as soon as he could, to make sure that, you know, there wouldn't be an autolysis problem, a decomposition problem, or the sample would degrade. There's more than enough time, to permit the sample to, go through any process of decomposition without completely decaying. So, that's not the problem. The time factor is not too large in the Tixla case. And secondly, what's even more interesting is that the, there was more than enough sample, the sample size was big enough so that, procuring some DNA would not be problematic. So, when you look at all of these things, you begin to say to yourself, then why won't it amplify? By the way, there's detectable DNA material, molecular fragments that are there. So, the material of DNA is there. The difficulty is there's nothing that amplifies, not in any of these hosts. And so we just are left with this bizarre question. Well, why not? Why isn't the profile there? And maybe you could say, well, Jesus didn't have a human father. Maybe that was the reason why, nothing to combine up, right, with the mother's DNA, and maybe that was a reason, or maybe, God didn't, I have no explanation for how this host, these miraculous hosts could be produced except by God, because it's scientifically inexplicable from a naturalistic point of view.
Right.
But the point is, though, that you might say, well, maybe God didn't want us to know, what that genetic profile is. Maybe he has a reason. But I'll tell you one thing, the presence of DNA material without an amplifiable profile is really, really weird indeed. So anyway, I'll maybe just leave it there. But these are just a few of the, conundrums that we are up against to talk about. How can such a host be produced? And if you start looking at the Lanciano host going back to the 8th century, of course, you're going to have chain of custody problems galore, right? that's not going to be really a possibility, simply because it dates back to the 8th century. So from that point of view, you might say that, what about the Lanciano host? Well, it resembles the three contemporary Eucharistic hosts that we have, the Buenos Aires, the Tixla, and the Tsikolcapolan ones. So when you look at it, you think, the AB blood type is there, the tissue growing out of the substance of the host is there, the absence of notable autolysis and decomposition, of course. As far as I know, Dr. Lanoli did not identify whether the tissue was alive, but I don't think it was alive. I don't think there were any kind of living white blood cells in that host. It's just simply too old. And remember that the Tsikolka and the Tixla tissues, even though there's healing going on, they are in the process of dying very, very slowly. Of course, they should have been dead, moments after, this kind of tissue was taken away from a circulatory system. An embodied circulatory system. But do I really believe that anybody could have faked it? No. How are you going to attach, a piece of heart tissue to the substance of the host and the level of the microfilaments, with a few micron separation, answer, you're not going to do it with any known technology. I think it's miraculous from start to finish. But there's a wonderful book that's produced by Dr. Kathleen Gomez. And if you post things on your podcast site, I can give you the reference. It's in Spanish.
Okay.
But I had the appendices and chapters 8 and 9 translated into scientific English. But it's a really interesting book. I mean, those 13 appendices are worth reading just in themselves. And I know, much of the audience here speaks Spanish very well. I would just get that book. It's wonderful. And he's very careful. And he gives a whole Eucharistic spirituality and alongside of it. And so he really, his faith has just come to the surface and elucidates all of the scientific jargon that I've just been given you. So, but that's the book worth really getting.
What is the name of the book once again for those listening?
It's called The Eucharistic Miracle of Tixla, but it's in Spanish. So don't ask me to say.
Oh, okay, okay.
Milagro.
I mean, how will we say that, Father Agustino? Let's translate it. Quizás dice
milagro eucarístico de Tixla.
Yeah. De Tixla. Yeah.
I'm sure a couple of Google searches.
It has a slightly longer one from the vantage point of scientific investigation or something. So I have to send you the real title. But
go ahead and send that to us. And we'll put that right on the, we give a description of today's podcast. And we'll have links and everything that people can look into.
Yeah. Father Spitzer, we've been talking about these four Eucharistic miracles. When I first was coming into my conversion, I was familiar with the Lanciano miracle, obviously, that because it might my conversion might predate all these Eucharistic miracles. Thanks be to God. These are happening, and the last three you mentioned happening within most of our lifetimes. Why? Yeah. So we've never had more technology than we do today. Beyond the scientific, what is this? Mm-hmm. What do you think this means that this is now appearing before the scientists today?
Well, I think the Lord recognizes that we live in a very scientific and a very skeptical culture. We also live in a very materialistic and secular culture. And because of that, there is always the skepticism, about the Holy Eucharist. And you can maybe remember that Pew survey that came out, I guess it was about 5 years ago, that said that, basically only about a third of the people in the United States, in the United States, believed in the real presence. And I was thinking to myself, well, I can see one way of counteracting it for the scientifically oriented group or for the skeptically oriented group. I mean, all I can say is these people are all of undisputed reputation. The labs are all very reputable labs where all the testing was done. How in the world are you going to explain this one? And I think maybe the Lord is trying to do this to sort of get us to say, yeah, there's his body and blood. It's not just his body and blood. It's his living heart tissue, which is wounded and beaten. And it is still, in the case of Tixla, emitting fresh blood from the center of that tissue, the center of that host where the tissue is present. I mean, you look at these things and maybe he's just trying to say, I'm trying to give you everything I can. To help you to see that, this truly is not just my real body and blood, but my whole self, my soul and my divinity. And like I said, in this book of Dr. Casignan Gomez, I think you might want to read his little chapters there on the lessons he gleans from the scientific investigation that he made of those two hosts. He also investigated some other miraculous sites as well. But really, the Eucharistic hosts are the ones that, I'm telling you.
Yeah, we have to get our hands on
Yeah.
On that, and speaking of books, you too, you also being a writer, I mean, that's so wonderful because you get to express all of this that you're sharing with us today mm-hmm. With the world, when they are in curiosity, when they are in wonder, when they, want to know more about these Eucharistic miracles. A question that I have is, so can they also detect, and showcase that it's male? And then also on top of that, the age, like, is that something that has been able to be detected throughout these investigations that are being done?
Unfortunately, no, because there is no amplifiable DNA profile. The blood type is independent of DNA, but in order, so we do know that very positively that it is AB blood type. We do know that it has human immunoglobulins in it. We do know that the blood also is human whole blood with human hemoglobin. And mm-hmm. those have been verified by various histopathological tests, both electrochemical and microscopic. So those kinds of things we do know. But when it comes down to a characteristic like a male, that would require a DNA amplifiable DNA profile. It would, or the, I think you said the age of the person,
mm-hmm.
That would come require an amplifiable DNA profile. So okay. I think, in general, that wouldn't be the case. However, it's definitely heart tissue,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah, for sure,
comes from the upper left ventricle, which is kind of interesting, because that's the place. That's the quadrant where the blood is pumped throughout the rest of the body. So that's an interesting fact. And of course, the fact that it's a wounded heart is very, very interesting, which reminds me of the Sacred Heart of Jesus, if you have that devotion, which I do. So, you know, that is another interesting dimension that, you know, parallels or even intersects with Catholic theology, devotion.
Father Robert, this is definitely something that I have a number of medical professionals in my family, and I can't wait for them to get their hands on this. We are going to be bringing this in for landing on this episode, but Father Robert, mm-hmm. Father Robert Spitzer, my man, you know, your information. This is incredible.
Well, yeah. I know we were just listening and this loving is, it all.
I love this. I love this.
This is
I love
so
this
needed.
Because this is, yeah, this is like explaining from the language that my brother and my sister speak. And it makes me so happy. But we need to get you to come back on our podcast. We're going to bring it in for a landing here. Eucharistic okay. Miracles. We want to keep it in bite-sized pieces for our listeners, but we're going to be back. And Father Robert, we can't wait to bring you back on the Revive podcast. How's that sound?
That sounds great to me. Thank you very, very much.
My brothers and sisters, we're going to be bringing it in for landing here. Thank you. Remember the Eucharist, the real presence in the Eucharist is our hope, and you got to revive it to keep it alive, okay? So hey, thank you for being here with us. I'm your host, Father Agostino.
Co-host, Solange.
And we're here with Father Robert. Thank you very much. God bless you all. Peace.
This has been a production of OSV Podcasts. To learn more, visit osvpodcasts.com.